Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning together Dira Yomim Beis, Perek Beis, the second chapter of the second book of Dira Yomim. Our Perek is 17 psukim long and the topic is Shlomo Melech and Hiram. The parallel parasha to be found is in Melachim Aleph Perek Hey primarily. So the first pasuk describes the amount of workers that Shlomo Melech amasses. He has 70,000 people and another 80,000 people. There are those who are carrying, there are those who are quarrying. 150,000 people in general, and he describes another 3,600 people who seem to be the foreman in charge of them. Who are these people, where they're coming from? So it seems that this is actually connected to the last part of the perek, the last two psukim in this perek, which describe the geirim. We'll discuss that as we get there as well. One thing which is worthwhile noting is that the numbers are a little bit different in Sefer Melachim. So when you hear about this in Sefer Melachim, in Perek at the end, it describes that there are 3,300 foremen. So the way the Radak explains it is that the tier of workmanship is the following. There's 150,000 people comprised of 80,000 carriers and 70,000 carriers and 80,000 quarriers. Over them are 3,300 foremen, and over them are 300 administrators. So that's the sort of the structure of this this operation. We now hear about a very fascinating request. This takes place between Psukim Beis and Tes, in which there's a message sent from Shlomo Melech to Huram, the king of Tyre, Tzor. And this is how the message goes. He says, look, you've done kindness with my father, with David. You sent us all types of woods for his palace. I would like to build a house to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, to Hashem, and be at a place a place where we can sacrifice in front of Him daily on Sabbaths, on Rosh Chodeshes, on festivals. That's when we're going to be sacrificing to Hashem. So it should be an eternal house for Him, and it's going to be really large because it is for the Almighty. But nobody can really, really make a place that's big enough for him, but we're going to try to make something which is a place for sacrifice. So he sort of explains the philosophical background to this. And so what's his request? He has two requests. Number one is, Shlach li ish chacham. No, send me an artisan, an architect who's going to be able to help and work with all the different materials, whether it be the golds, the stone, or the rocks, or the materials. Send him to me. Number two, please send me arozim, brosim, v'algumim. So he says, please send me all these different types of woods, whether it be the algum wood, the cypress wood, the cedar wood, the sycamore. Send all these materials. And in response to Shlomo Melech, says that for those who are going to be working, I will send large amounts of supplies. So he promises a thing which in barter, which Tyre is lacking in, which is barley, crushed wheat, wine, and oil. Those are the things which come from the mainland of Israel, which Tyre does not have. Okay, so just a few basic questions here. First of all, the name Huram is parallel to the word Hiram in Sefer Melachim. It's the same person, Huram, Hiram, different ways of pronouncing the same name of this person. Who was he? So he is the king of the Phoenician port Tyre. Phoenicia was the neighbor in the north, in the area of where Lebanon, the country, is today. There were two major ports which controlled most of the Mediterranean trade, and they were Sidon and Tyre, which feature a lot during Tanakh. Other cities as well are around this area as well. It actually means rock. Tzor means a rock, even in Hebrew today, Tzur. And the idea is actually it is a island which is half a mile opposite the mainland. It was impenetrable because it was heavily fortified, could only be accessed by sea, and the Phoenicians were very strong. They had a great fleet. It took a long time for the Nebuchadnezzar and later on the Greeks to actually conquer Tyre as well. We hear about this incredible relationship, and as Josephus points out in Antiquities 8, that it wasn't just trade which was set up between the nation of Israel and their ally in the north, Phoenicia, but there was a lot of, in fact, Shlomo Melech would exchange later on riddles with Hiram the king, and it's described as they respected each other in terms of wisdom. Okay, so what is Shlomo referring to as you helped my father? So if you go back to Sefer Shmuel Beis Perakei, you'll notice that Hiram, when David Melech was coronated as king, sent him all these supplies of these different materials, mostly wood, to make his palace. And David Melech knew at that point in time that he was really the king of all of Israel, because even the neighbors were leaning in as well. The reason why Tyre is able to send the wood is because the cedars of Lebanon is one of the most precious products that Lebanon exports. In fact, the flag of Lebanon today is a white flag with a red strip on the bottom and the top, and in the center a green tree. That tree is the cedar of Lebanon, and it is one of their primary exports, certainly at this time when we're describing. If contrasting this to Sefer Melachim, it's actually a little different in the sense that in Sefer Melachim, the first person to send the correspondence is actually Hiram, who sends it to Shlomo as condolences for the loss of his father. Then Shlomo Melech makes a request, and then Hiram and they barter and they make different negotiations about who's going to be sending what. The Malbim actually suggests that there were two separate messages being sent. First was the one described in Sefer Melachim, that was earlier on, and now later on is a second set of correspondence asking for more. So what is how does Hiram respond? We hear from the last psukim in the Perek Yud to Tesvav, where we hear about how Hiram responds, and his response very exuberantly, very very powerfully. He says in the letter, he says, you know, Hashlomo, in Hashem's love for you, that's why He gave you as a king to them. Hashem be blessed, the gods of Israel. The God of Israel, and who controls heaven and earth, and gave David HaMelech such a wise and knowledgeable son to build a base for him. And he says, I'm going to send you the artisan you requested. He's a man from the tribe of Dan. His mother's from Dan. His father's a Tyrian. And he knows how to work all these different materials, gold, silver, copper, stones, wood, all the different materials, argon, tcheles, boots. I'm going to send him and he's going to help you as well. And he says, then please send also the wheat and the barley and the oil and the wine that you promised. And the way they sent the wood down was they sent it as rough sodos alayam. So they sent these barges, they sort of tied the wood together and sent it by sea. It was faster, probably cheaper to send it via sea than via land. And he sends off Atot Aleos Sam Yerushalayim, and then you'll take them from the ports to Jerusalem. So it seems to be a very, very amenable, very equitable arrangement. The fact that he's so praiseworthy of God is fascinating, which leads to the question: Is Hiram himself a monotheist, or is he just a Judeophile? Is he appreciative of Judaism, or is he in fact a monotheist? It's clear if you look in the annals of secular history, it is clear that he is a polytheist. In fact, he introduces a new god into the pantheon as part of his political campaign. So it's hard to say that he is a monotheist, but it seems that he certainly appreciates the David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech. Is it a good thing asking for help from him? So the Tana de Eliyahu in Perek Yud Ches, Tana de Eliyahu Rabbah, suggests that it's not such a good thing. In fact, the Mishkan which Moshe made was only of materials that they got themselves. And in fact, in the future, the Midrash says that the base of the Bayis Shlishi will only be of our own materials. But he says that the fact that Shlomo HaMelech used others to get their materials, felt that there was a weakness in the Beis HaMikdash, which is why it wasn't as impenetrable as it possibly could have been. That doesn't mean to say that Shlomo HaMelech was wrong, but this wasn't seen as the most optimal of arrangements. In fact, just to remember that David HaMelech had already stockpiled all of the necessary materials, so the fact that Shlomo HaMelech is reaching out itself is seen for whatever reason he wants to use his own materials. He doesn't want to use the materials David HaMelech amassed through war, but is seen as unnecessary as through the eyes of this Midrash. You'll notice that even in the building the second Beis HaMikdash at Shivas Tzion, Ezra and Nehemiah reject any of the help. Zerubbabel rejects any help from neighbors. They don't want their neighbors to be helping them. They want this to be solely an Israelite project as well. It's also worthwhile noting that later on in history, the Jews do get a little too cozy with the Phoenicians, and that's when Achav marries Izebel, the daughter of Etbaal, who is in fact the king of Sidon, the other Phoenician port. So that's not a good stage in Jewish history. She introduces Baal worship into Israel. It's a very, very bad situation. So having all these relationships is helpful. It's good to have alliances, but it's not always theologically a good thing. This person who he sends, who is he? Is he an Israelite, a Phoenician? What's the story? So we actually have different accounts of this. In Sefer Melachim, we hear that he is a son of a widow from Amman Naphtali, and his father was a Ish Tzori, a Tyrian. Here we hear that his father's an Tyrian, but his mother's from Dan. So how do we resolve this? Rashi says, quoting Chazal, that his ultimately he was a Tzori. When it says he was a Tyrian, it doesn't mean that he was of that culture, but rather he lived there. But he was a Jew or Israelite who lived there for business, and he was called Tyrian because he lived there. But His mother was from Naphtali and his father was from Dan. And that explains the discrepancy. The Malbim says actually there were two different people. The first person was a person who Shlomo HaMelech requested to help with architecture. And this is the person described here in Divrei Yomim Beis. And he was a great architect, but he died at some point in the project. And later on, 7 years later, at the completion of the Beis HaMikdash, Shlomo HaMelech ascends for his son. That's why his mother was widowed, and he is brought in and the son only has expertise in copper, which is why he does the copper work, as you see in Sefer Melachim. So they're two separate people as well, as a suggestion. This just also explains the differences in lineage. The Abaye Barnea on the Ralbag says no, not necessarily. Let's take it literally. That in fact this was an intermarriage. His father was a Phoenician. His mother was an Israelite. There was already intermarriage happening at this stage in the game, and his mother maybe had two lineages, both Naphtali and Dan. Why is Dan being emphasized here? So Rabbi Chaim Angel once pointed out to me that the idea is that the Sefer Divrei HaYamim is trying to emphasize the connection to the primordial, the Mishkan. And if you remember the Mishkan, there were two architects. There was Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur lemate Yehuda, and there was Aliyah ben Achisamach lemate Dan. So there was an architect who was from Dan. And so therefore, maybe that in the family line, there was both the blood of Naphtali and Dan, but in the end of the day, it was Dan, which is being emphasized in Divrei HaYamim, which is trying to connect the dots of the puzzle and specifically giving us this idea of the connection to Dan. And that's what Rashi says as well. That's why Leah, when she called her son Dan, it was because she felt that she had now also had a chelek, a portion of the building the Mishkan, not just Bezalel from Yehuda, but Dan, who had built both the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash through Aliyav initially, and now this man as well. What's his name? His name is Hiram, not to be confused with the king. He's just Hiram the artisan. Okay, and finally the Perek concludes with two last psukim where it talks about David HaMelech amassing this workforce of Gerim. And it describes then the numbers once again of these people who are going to be the ones to carry and quarry the materials. Who are these Gerim? So it's hard to say that these are converts to Judaism per se. The Rambam actually says in Hilchos Isurei Bia that at the time of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech, the Beis Din HaGadol, the large Beis Din, was not accepting converts to Judaism because the concern was that it was for ulterior motives because of fear of conquest in the times of David HaMelech, or because of the incredible economic success in the times of Shlomo HaMelech. Although there were individual Bate Dinim giving Gerus, but the Beis Din HaGadol would not accept them. So Rashi says that the Gerim referred to over here are the Givonim, which are a nation which already submitted themselves as a workforce to Israel many years ago. And the Radak says maybe Gerei Tosha, that means Canaanite nations living around them who had already relinquished their pagan service, but they were not Israelite per se. So David HaMelech used them as the task force or some of the labor necessary to be able to produce the items necessary for the Beis HaMikdash. This again sets us up for the building of the Beis HaMikdash, which will be in the next few prakim. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.